Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, where archaeology and economics intersect.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Futurist series, and welcome to Professor Sir Barry Cunliffe, who will talk to us about trade and early civilizations.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm absolutely delighted to be here, and I must thank Martin for the invitation. When the email from him arrived, I assumed that it was a joke from my students. You know, who on earth would want an archaeologist to talk to a group of economists of this stature and breadth? I imagine, too, you would find it rather odd to have an archaeologist before you. But if your vision of archaeologists is Harrison Ford and Raiders of the Lost Ark, believe me, it's very, very, very different.
The IMF Futurist Seminars are intended to help economists think outside the box, something Sir Barry Cunliffe has done throughout his long career as one of Europe's most highly respected archaeologists. His books and research have examined the human instinct to trade dating back thousands of years, the first steps toward the globalized world we know today. Sir Barry Cunliffe is an emeritus professor at Oxford University, and I met him after his presentation at the IMF. So is there a relationship, do you think, between economics and archaeology, and how much of a stretch is that, do you think?
Oh, I think there's a direct relationship, because as archaeologists we're looking at human beings in their environment and how they structure their society, how they live, how they generate their general well-being. And this goes back absolutely to economics. The fact that you are putting in, you're investing your labour into producing food, that you produce a surplus, you use that surplus to exchange for something that you want. I mean, it's all basic economics, very basic, but that's what it is. And I don't think you could be an archaeologist without being fascinated by economics.
So did this come to you at some point in time, or was it always the economic side of things? Has it always been sort of part of your research?
I've always been interested in that. I was interested particularly early on in the relationship between barbarian society in Europe, Iron Age society in Europe, and the Roman Empire, and how the Roman Empire expanded and how they related to the barbarians in terms of trade and exchange and slave raiding and all those things. So it was embedded in my set of interests right from the beginning, and has, if anything, has developed a lot more.
So a lot of the problems that we talk about today tend to be linked to globalization. At least people tend to make that link to globalization. And I think in people's minds, this is globalization is a fairly recent thing. When did globalization start for archaeologists?
That's a difficult one to answer, because it depends on what sort of scale you're talking about. You could be talking about a European scale of globalization, or you could be talking about a Eurasian scale of globalization, or a complete global one, you know. I think if we're looking at how societies join up, how they create connectivity, which is always generated, I think, by the need to interact and exchange and so on, and exchange commodities. I think right from the third millennium BC in Eurasia, you can see commodities moving from one end of Eurasia to the other. And if that's a mark of some kind of incipient globalization, then it goes back to about 3000.
Wow. And so with this long history of trade, should that long history inform policy more than it does? Do you think maybe we could be doing a better job at that?
No, I don't think that. No, I think what archaeology and this long-durée look at human activity tells us that is of value today is how we as human, what drives us as humans. And I think acquisition is a very, very important part of our inbuilt drive. It's hardwired into our genes, this desire to acquire things and knowledge and self-knowledge and things like that. And knowing that and seeing, which one can learn very well from archaeology, how the environment is so crucial, this relationship between humans and their environment is absolutely vital to understand. I think this gives us a better awareness of where we are now and what we're doing and why we're doing various things. So I think it's really, I suppose archaeology provides us with a sounding board to try and understand ourselves and our present condition better. And so, if you like, so we don't go on making the same mistakes.
So that's interesting that you make that relationship between the environment and human activity. Do you think that the environment is perhaps more important in those terms today than it might have been a couple of thousand years ago?
Well, I think it's always been important, always been absolutely vital, because in the past, the human relationship with the environment has been a very, very delicate one, and humans have damaged the environment way back in time, you know, putting too many goats on the mountainsides and creating soil erosion, things like that. So, and also the environment changes, and even minor changes in environment can have an incredible knock-on effect if your economy is a very simple and rather fragile one. So an archaeologist will always look at those two things, humanity and how humanity works, and the environment in which that group of humanity lives, and at the dynamic between them. And there always is a dynamic, and unless you get that perspective right, you just can't understand the past.
So you've been studying ancient trade routes for most of your career. You've written extensively on it. And when you look at places like Petra in the Middle East or Timbuktu in Africa, these places have left indicators to give, you know, nuggets or some insight to archaeologists and historians as to what life was in that period. What do you think we might leave as indicators for those historians or archaeologists 1,000 or hundreds of years from now?
That's a very tricky one. I think I'd probably start by saying that what archaeologists do really is to study other people's rubbish. My raw material is the detritus of the past. So that's how, if I were an archaeologist in 100 years or 200 years' time and I was studying present-day society, I would look at the detritus of the past. I would look at the rubbish heaps, the stuff we leave around, and try and reconstruct the society from that raw material. Archaeologists are used to looking at what remains and filling in the gaps. There's no way we can preserve everything for the past. No way we should preserve everything for the past. We ought to preserve the best of our buildings, modern buildings and so on, and do that kind of thing. And most civilized societies do that. We must try and preserve our libraries, as for example, that wonderful library in Timbuktu that you mentioned. But I think apart from that, some very interesting work was done in New York not so many years ago, looking at some of the early areas of settlement where the view was that these were very poor Irish communities settling and living a very meagre life in New York. And when they dug up the rubbish tips and so on, they found that there was quite a lot of exotic goods, you know, elaborate pottery and so on. Life wasn't as bad as it was made out to be in the documents. So I think archaeology often redresses some misapprehensions that we've got from other sources.
So most people in development today would say that protecting cultural assets or the environment or essentially anything having to do with human development, there needs to be an economic rationale to it. Mm-hmm. What do you think that, I mean, what does it mean for society when we have to put a price tag on everything?
Yes, this is rather like some years ago, the British Museum was asked to say how much its collection was worth. That was almost impossible to do, just picked figures out of the air, really. But it doesn't worry me terribly much, because I think if what I'm doing, if society perceives what I'm doing has a value, that pleases me no end. And how does one measure this? Well, certainly in Britain we have an organisation called English Heritage, which looks after 400 monuments. The number of people who visit those monuments is colossal, and it's going up and up and up. And this shows that people, the monuments are there, they're attractive and so on, but people are desperately interested in their past. And I think that is a factor that we cannot just live today. We really do need to know about our roots and what archaeology provides, and the physical remains of archaeology, like the monuments and the museum collections, is a way for us to relate to our roots, to sort of interrogate our roots. And that's something which deep down inside we need. So I don't think you can put a price on that, but you can see it working. And there is a figure which I can never remember, but the tourist industry in Britain is a vast figure, and a very high percentage of the foreign tourists come because of the cultural heritage of Britain, and that's what they're looking at. So there is a real cash value that can be put on the cultural heritage. It doesn't worry me that we have to do it. It means we've just got to communicate what we're doing rather better.
And we are talking these days especially about public assets and public wealth. Do you think that cultural assets should be more integrated into public wealth?
I think there is a huge value in the cultural assets, but in many countries those assets are not all government owned. In fact, a fairly small percentage are, quite often privately owned. And if I can just give you one example, there was a ship which was raised from the sea called the Mary Rose, just off Portsmouth. It was a Tudor warship. And that, a trust was set up to raise it, to build a museum, to put it in that museum, to create the museum ambience around it, and to draw in tourists. That was all done by a trust. And what it has done is to create a big stream of people coming into Portsmouth, where the museum is. And those people, of course, they pay their entrance fee, which helps maintain the museum. They also spend money in Portsmouth, which is doesn't have many other attractions. So it contributes to the wealth of the local community. So I think there are lots of organisations about the world that are trusts or even private owners who, because they develop and communicate their cultural assets, do good by the community as a whole and bring in wealth for that community.
So one of the unfortunate consequences of insecurity and instability, which we're seeing a lot of and have been seeing in the past 10 or 15 years, is the destruction of heritage sites. What do you think is the role of archaeologists in trying to protect heritage sites in conflict zones?
I think we have to do that. It is part of our mission to do that. We have to do that. And indeed, in the last war, the Second World War, there were attached to the British Army in North Africa, there were a group of archaeologists who went around with the army to make sure that the cultural assets were protected as the army moved through North Africa. I think in those situations, and there are international laws about it being a criminal offence to destroy an antiquity in an act of warfare, deliberately to destroy. So that's easy, but it's when you get into this sort of terrorism area where people destroy artifacts of an age for which they have no sympathy or in fact an antipathy, then that's much more difficult. And I think there are archaeologists, they're all different, but some brave archaeologists have stood out against this and paid with their lives. Palmyra is a classic case. I think it is our duty to protect, not for a sort of transient present where certain values might be held, but for the long-term future.
So at what point do you think that the cultural values and economic values intersect, and how important do you think it is that we acknowledge that intersection?
Yes, I think the cultural values really give us a quality of life. They add to our quality of life. I know this is a fairly open-ended statement, but our life would be less rich without maintaining those cultural values and without making the culture of the past right across the world available to us all. And we would be diminished by not doing it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Sir Barry Cunliffe, archaeologist and emeritus professor at Oxford University. His latest book, By Steppe, Desert and Ocean, is published by Oxford University Press. If you like this podcast, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast.